Well, the Federal Open Market Committee is preparing for the next meeting. This is an important meeting because it is a quarterly March, June, September, December, I mean, a quarterly meeting at the end of the quarter where it is accompanied by a media conference. This time it'll be the new Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, who will be presiding over the media conference. Of course, the Federal Open Market Committee, which is the policy arm of the Federal Reserve, has 8 confabs a year in order to take a look at the near-term direction of monetary policy. And at these meetings, they evaluate the relative concerns about the outlook for economic growth, whether it's too hot, too cold, or just right. They look at inflation data coming in, whether it's too high, too low, or just right. And then they vote, the members vote, on what policy course to take at these meetings. These meetings are extremely important, but especially the March, June, September, and December meetings. Now, we've already seen 5 rate increases at these meetings. In every case, these rate increases took place at the meeting at the end of the quarter, the month at the end of the quarter. All of the rate hikes occurred in either March, June, September, or December during this current Federal Reserve monetary tightening cycle. And it is widely anticipated that we will see rate increase number 6 this coming Wednesday when the meeting announcement is made. The Federal Open Market Committee issues a statement. In that statement, they are expected to raise the federal funds rate, the short-term interest rate that is used to price loans between member banks for their reserve accounts. That money is expected to go up in cost by 0.25%, also known as 25 basis points. And when that occurs, it's a slam dunk at this point. We'll be looking at a new rate range for federal funds, the shortest of all short-term rates, and the rate from which all other short-term rates are derived. And the new range, when this is announced Wednesday, will be 1.5 to 1.75. I'm rating the chances of this rate hike at 100%. Now, what happens after this? There are going to be, assuming economic growth continues, there are going to be at least 3 rate hikes this year. If it gets a little too hot on the economy, there will be 4. So that means June and September are on the table, possibly December as well. So this rate hike will take it to 1.5 to 1.75. A June rate hike would take it to 1.75 too. A September rate hike would take federal funds to 2 to 2.25. And if they hiked in December, we'd be at 2.25 to 2.5. But in order to get to at least 3% on the federal funds rate, we would need 3 more hikes next year. That would require the economy to continue to grow in 2019. I think if the economy did continue to grow in 2019, you would see the federal funds up in the general area of 3%. And by the way, to give you some idea what that would mean, 3% is a higher rate than you can get right now on a 10-year treasury, which is 2.85%. But of course, during the course of events, it would be typical for the longer rates to also increase. And if the longer rates did increase, that would avoid, in the near term, that would avoid an inversion of the yield curve, which typically occurs prior to the onset of recessionary conditions. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the Federal Reserve and the policy arm, the Federal Open Market Committee. And this meeting will start on Tuesday. It will be a pajama party Tuesday night, and a box lunch on Wednesday at the Fed building, and that will be prior to the announcement of the statement and the media conference, which occurs Wednesday afternoon in the Eastern Time Zone. And I mentioned the Federal Open Market Committee as the policy making arm of the Federal Reserve, because this is the group that convenes, I mentioned, 8 times a year. So this is one of 8 meetings to determine the direction of short-term interest rates, and that, again, being the overnight rate that banks pay each other for borrowing reserves when a bank has a shortfall in required reserves. All the member banks each night have to have a minimum percentage of their deposits. According to the class of deposits, these minimums are established, and they must have a minimum percentage of their deposits on deposit at the Federal Reserve Bank as a member bank. And so they check the numbers every day, and sometimes they're short on what they need, so they have to borrow money from another bank that has excess funds in reserves. And for that overnight loan, it's a one-day loan, they pay the federal funds rate. And so that when you hear this expression, the federal funds rate or the Fed funds rate, that's the rate that they're talking about. And obviously it's a very, very important rate, especially from the standpoint of the banks who are borrowing on an overnight basis in order to meet their member bank deposit requirement. Now, one of the factors that is very closely watched by the Federal Open Market Committee in their policy deliberations is the policy is the area of inflation. The Federal Reserve monitors inflation data very, very closely. Now, most people look at the Consumer Price Index, and they see now that the Consumer Price Index year over year has already exceeded the Fed target of 2.0. The year over year Consumer Price Index right now is 2.2. And over the last 6 months, the annual rate has been higher than that. But the main focus of the Federal Open Market Committee members is on the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index. This is the preferred inflation gauge of the Federal Reserve, and the reason is because it is more closely aligned to the cost of living than the CPI. The Consumer Price Index measures a fixed basket of goods and services, and it is not the truest, the best gauge of inflation, and worse yet, it intends to overstate inflation. Which means, by the way, that since a lot of these things in the government figures are indexed to the CPI, they are overpaying in consumer price index terms. For example, when they use the consumer price index to index Social Security payments, they are overpaying Social Security recipients by using the consumer price index. They should, of course, use the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, and that's because it is more closely aligned to the actual cost of living. But there's a lot of idiocy in government, as you have learned over your lifetime. This is one more example of the idiocy in the federal government. Instead of using the index that they should use, instead of using the index that is more closely aligned to the actual cost of living, which is the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, they don't do that. They don't do the obvious. They use another index, the Consumer Price Index, which on a serial basis overstates inflation, therefore they're overpaying inflation into the Social Security payout system. Pure idiocy, the only way to describe it. Because when you look at the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, it's actually lower than the CPI. Remember, it's more closely aligned to the cost of living, so it really matters. The year-over-year Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index is 1.7. That's a full one-half of 1% below the Consumer Price Index. That's a big difference, especially when you start cutting Social Security checks and adjusting them to the rate of inflation. So this is another example. We've talked about so many examples of idiocy at the federal level. We've also seen it with the absence of making bonds callable. So they go out and they issue these high coupon bonds during times of high inflation years ago, and they can't call them in like so many corporate and municipal issues are callable. They can't call them in because they're non-callable. Another example of total idiocy at the federal level. Another example would be the fact that they did not take full advantage of the extremely low rates that we had by issuing long-term bonds. I mean, anybody with a first-grade education would have been able to see that the time to issue 50- and 100-year treasuries was when the treasury rate was down to 1.4% in the summer of 2016, less than 2 years ago. Less than 2 years ago, the 10-year treasury was available for 1.38%. And they could have gone out and issued 50- and 100-year treasuries there for ridiculously low rates that they would have been able to sell. Pure idiocy at the treasury level. They did not do it. And now, as a result, rates have already moved up. The 10-year has more than doubled to 2.85. The 30-year is up around over 3% now. It's up in the area of 3.2%. But the treasury let that opportunity pass itself by, and here we are.